Talk Back with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, a happy day.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. No guest today, no hard-hitting commentary. That'll happen on all the other programs this week. Instead, today, the latest on health and healing, broadcasting live and video streaming live from our studios in New York. If you'd like to watch today's show, you can go to progressiveradionetwork.com. I am going to be opening the call line for the entire program. So if you'd like to call in with a question, a comment, a thought, something to share, please do. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'll also be doing an in-depth examination of our environment. A commentary from alternate Tina Gelthart. Our oceans are in dire shape, but without them, all life on land, human, plant, and animal, is gone. This is very important. Then I'll give you some additional environmental updates. So when you'd like to call, we're going to take your calls. Let's begin, however. I'm concerned that right now in the United States, we are facing the largest unfunded or underfunded entitlement health program in our country's history. My generation are now taking care of their aging parents. I'm helping senior citizens every day. In fact, one of my friends, a very famous, well-known person, is suffering from dementia. And we'll repeat the same thing 5 or 10 times in a half hour, an hour conversation. This person used to be absolutely sharp. The trouble is, was never really into a healthy lifestyle and didn't think that they had to be into a healthy lifestyle. But sooner or later, every single choice that you make has a consequence. Every hot dog, french fry, alcohol, caffeine, it all adds up. And then one day, we end up seeing a manifestation, or what we call a tipping. Our biochemistry shifts. The DNA is so damaged it can no longer repair itself. And then we see the symptom. Today I was speaking with a woman who stopped me on the street. I was coming back. I'd been writing my commentaries all week for this coming week. And she had a comment. She says, Gary, she says, I've been listening to you for about 12 years. And I agree with much of what you have to say, but do you really think it's making a difference? And I said, well, there's two ways of looking at it. One way is that we know if we've made the right choice or wrong choice when something happens. When you have a happy relationship or a divorce, whether you go bankrupt or prosper, whether you're happy or sad, whether you have disease or not, a stroke or vibrant health, whether you're good weight or overweight, you'll only know that when something happens. The trouble is, it doesn't make any sense. It's the wrong way to look at life, because it means that we just flip a coin. Heads or tails. Heads I win, tails I lose. Why would you gamble with everything that's precious to you? Your own health, your children's health, the relationships you have, your financial security, the air you breathe, the water you drink. Why gamble with it? So I suggested to her, as I will share with you, what I think is a much healthier way of making all of our choices. Ask yourself, what do you want the outcome of your life to be? And then break it into categories. There's not just one overarching theme. Yes, we all want to be healthy and happy. Break it. What kind of friendships do you want? What kind of relationships do you want? What kind of intimacy do you want? What type of creativity would you like to do? And what would you like to be creative in? Music or art, dance, a linguist, whatever it may be. Where in the world would you like to travel? What cultures would you like to explore? What haven't you done that you would like to do? What kind of health would you like to have? And it's amazing how many people, when it comes to health and happiness, they give you a very odd answer. They'll say, well, not too healthy. I mean, I don't want to go overboard. What does it mean to be too healthy? No disease, being able to run, walk, swim, jog, bike, being around people who are sick and not get sick. That's the kind of health that they're talking about. So they're saying, I'm going to be really conservative about the choices I make. So I'm going to do a lot of things that are bad and some things that are good and hope for a good outcome. It's not going to happen. I don't want to be too happy. I don't trust people that smile too many times or are too optimistic or try to look for the right side of things, try to find the best in you. I much prefer people that are much more reactive. Everything's black and white. You're either good or bad. You're either blessed or you're evil. You're either rich or poor. You're either smart or an idiot. Really? I mean, there's nothing in life that's that way. But that's our conditioning. So when you ask people to look at things differently with a different mindset, it scares them. And so I told the woman, so we've had a lot of people listening to the show, but it doesn't mean everyone has taken advantage of what's been on the program, because what if you're one of those people that don't want to give up bad habits? You don't want to give up your comfort foods, even if they're capable of causing cancer. You don't want to give up your political affiliations, even if they have betrayed you. You don't want to give up your risky way of dealing with your relationship, even if it means that you'll be alone and will have wasted a good relationship. So I said, you have to take each thing and ask yourself, what's your ideal? Start with an ideal. Start with the joy and innocence of a child. And ask yourself, if you could do it all over again, what would you put in its place today? And then that's how you should make your choices. If every choice you make comes from your ideal, and you then create the discipline and develop the tools that allow you to achieve those steps one at a time, and everything becomes a new learning curve, and that's okay, then there's no reason to expect that you're not going to be vibrantly healthy, very happy, able to deal with crisis much better, and respect and appreciate what you have, and other people as well. So it was just an interesting conversation. Now, that taken into account, when I look at my friend, who's not old, not chronologically, but now suffers from dementia, and the trouble is giving this person protocol, this person forgets to take the protocol. So then there has to be another person, a caregiver. In this case, there's no one in this person's family that wants to take the time because it disrupts their own life. Well, what about all of us who are now taking care of our parents? So at one time in our life, in our 40s or 50s or 60s, where we were going to spend more time on what was important to us, we're now taking care of our relatives, which, by the way, morally we should. We have a moral responsibility. You can't abandon someone when they're in a tough position. I even called someone just today who was going through a crisis, and I said, count me in for X dollars. I'll help you out. It didn't relieve the person's total indebtedness, but it was a life raft. You know, it helped them. At least they were very surprised and very appreciative. They said, before I hung up the phone, he said, why? I said, well, it's simple. How many times have I seen what you've done to help our society without ever getting a nickel or even a thank you from people? I don't forget the people who've been out there. Real people. Sustaining. Long-term sustaining on your own dime and your own time. So this is the least I can do for you. And I'm hopeful that other people that you know will do the same. It's those moments when you don't turn your back. The Marines have this notion, well, in fact, all members of the armed forces, but that you don't leave anyone behind in battle. Even if you risk other people being injured or killed, you extract those people. I believe that we should have that attitude towards the poor, those who are incapacitated, those who are not able at this time in their life to defend for themselves. Now, someone will call it a weakness. Someone will call it stupid. Someone will call it, you know, encouraging laziness. I don't. I say we shouldn't, as a society, leave the children who are hungry behind. We have 12 million hungry children. If we don't pay attention, they'll be left behind. And all the senior citizens eating cat food and really non-human food, should we leave them behind? The people's homes are being foreclosed on. Should we leave them behind? The people who are trying their best to work, they're not lazy, but they're just not the jobs. They're being outsourced. Should we leave them behind? So when you start realizing that if we took another mindset, let's leave nobody behind, everyone who we can help, let's help, then suddenly become a different mindset. You look at life optimistically. You look for solutions. So now we're left at this major point in our society. We have more people to help than we have resources to help them. And there's no current plan anywhere at all in the United States by any state, local, or federal government, no national foundation, no charity, to reverse or even to prevent the diseases which we were all going to have to help. And it'll bankrupt the system. And it'll destroy lives because caregivers live shorter lives. They burn out. Now comes this news. This is today. Quote, the annual cost of brain disorders in Europe has soared to 798 billion euros in what a new study describes as a social, political, financial ticking bomb. The report entitled Costs of Disorders of the Brain in Europe 2010, commissioned by the European Brain Council, argues that the bill will continue to rise as people live longer, thus representing the number one economic challenge for European healthcare now and in the future. That's equivalent to $1,500,000,000 per year just to take care of people with aging brains. Now, did you hear what I just said? We've never had this figure thrown at us before. In Europe, this year, just for people with dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, forgetfulness, lack of cognition, $1.5 trillion. What is it in America? In the high hundreds of billions. And it will hit a trillion shortly. Then we've got my generation approaching retirement or in the near future, in the next 5, 10, 1 year for the earliest baby boomers, 1945 on. That means we're going to have, in all likelihood, within the next 10 years, 100 billion senior citizens, and I'm going to say at least half will be suffering from brain disorders. You're then going to look at $2 trillion in medical expenses. $2 trillion. It'll be the largest single expenditure in all of American history each year, and we won't have any of the money to pay for it. So here's my suggestion, because now we know the problem. It's just enormous. It dwarfs any other problem we have today. I believe that we should start immediately to have suggestions, and I'll put a page up tomorrow on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, of what we can do to look at the problem, delineate the problem and its causes, and then all solutions. I will put my 2 cents in. I am now going to produce at least 3 documentaries simultaneously I decided today to hit the problem on three different levels. People are already suffering from any form of aging illnesses, including mind-brain illnesses. People suffering from body illnesses separate from the mind, like arthritis, heart disease, diabetes. And third, to look at the preventative stage. What we must do starting in the early grades, right through college, as mandatory classes, but having nothing in the world to do. I'm going to ask everyone to ask Orthodox medicine and Orthodox scientists and Orthodox dietitians to have zero input because they've controlled all health care, all dietary advice forever. They have been consistently wrong about everything. They have contributed to more death and disease and injury than any other people in all of America's world wars combined. I have the statistics. 900 million injuries and over 7 million unnecessary deaths. So I'm going to ask them, get out of the picture completely. You're ill-equipped. You may have good intent. You may want to do the right thing, but you're doing the wrong thing. And hence, we're going to ask people who have the right knowledge, who have proven success on lifestyle modification, behavior modification, exercise, biochemistry, nutrition, healing energy work, alternative medicine, homeopathy, acupuncture, meditation, all these healing sciences to come together. It'll be a big program, but look at what happens if we don't address it, and no one in the government will address it. Their only approach is a drug, and there's no drug they have, zero drugs they have, that can reverse any of these diseases or even slow them down. We can. In fact, I just put one up today. One person that we reversed her Alzheimer's. They can't show you one in their entire medical industry. We can have many. I'm showing you one. Up on progressiveradionetwork.com and GaryNoll.com. So that's just from this. Now, next up, a new study shows inflammatory food toxins in high levels in infants. What's the number one cause of illness? Inflammation. Where do we get inflammation? Well, our diet, our air, our water, chemicals that we're exposed to, and stress. This is from Mount Sinai Hospital, Mount Sinai School of Medicine. I'll quote. Researchers from Mount Sinai School of Medicine have found high levels of food toxins called advanced glycation end products in infants. Excessive food glycation products through both maternal blood transmission and baby formula could together significantly increase children's risk of diseases such as diabetes from a very young age. A second study on these same chemicals in adults found that cutting back on processed, grilled, and fried foods, which are high in these chemicals, may improve insulin resistance in people with diabetes. Toxic glucose byproducts, previously tied to high blood sugar, are found in most heated foods in great excess in commercial infant formulas. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Diabetes Care. Why is this important? Because you first heard on any radio show in the United States when I was talking about how our body ages in a 10-part series on understanding the aging process about 15 years ago. And I explained what glycation was, and I gave you an example, if you remember. I said, just visualize a moist chicken, soft, pliable, elastic, going into an oven. Now, 2 hours later, take it out. It's brown and crisp. I said, that's glycation. When you have proteins and sugar molecules coming together, you create glycation. Well, what's a hamburger? Protein and sugar. You know, what's a bun? What's a pizza? This is how you get this. And in a normal meal, people have multiple glycation products, meaning multiple sources of simple sugars and protein. The fact that most people eat this way doesn't make it right. It just makes it normal. But it doesn't make it healthy. So now we're seeing it's in infants. So here's what it means in just lay language. For all the mothers who are going to be pregnant Remember what I've been suggesting for a long time. If you have the ability to plan your pregnancy, take 2 years to completely detoxify your mind and your body from heavy metals, chemicals, viruses, and it'll take about that long, and then also rebalance yourself at the emotional and spiritual level. Because we are a nation today that is just filled with rage and anger and jealousies and envies and insecurities. I've never seen us rushing to the bottom on all levels as I have now. So taking a new life, bringing a new life into that environment is disastrous for the infant. So now let's say you didn't plan your pregnancy and you're pregnant, so you're eating pizzas and you're drinking. That is how all these glycation products are now ending up in the blood that goes in to feed the fetus, in the umbilical cord, and then when you're breastfeeding, comes right through in the breast milk. So if you're eating genetically engineered foods or pesticide foods, that's what the baby's getting. If you've had vaccines, that's imparting a non-natural immunity. Not a humoral immunity or cell-mediated immunity, but rather an artificial immunity. Hence, it will cause the child a lot of illnesses. So do it right, and you protect your child. And lastly, we are what we experience. This is a new study from the Virginia Commonwealth University, and it's a good study, and here's what it says. Our life experiences, meaning the ups and downs, and everything in between, shape us. They stay with us, and they influence our emotional set point as adults. The study suggests, in addition to our genes, our life experiences are important influences on the levels of anxiety and depression. Here's what the head researcher, Dr. Kelmer, MD, from the Virginia Institute of Psychiatric and Behavioral Genetics, in this time of emphasis on genes for this and that trait, it is important to remember that our environmental experiences also make important contributions to who we are as people. Now, what does this mean in just everyday lay language? Growing up, children are extremely resilient. If you give a kid a lot of presents, they'll generally still play with only one or two that become their favorites. If you look in your closet, you'll see that of all the clothes you have, the shoes, the shirts, the skirts, the dresses, the pants, there's a couple that you really like that are comfortable, you like the way they fit, and you wear them frequently, and some you won't wear at all. And then take the child that's born poor, and they'll find things to play with. If you were to go, as I have, and look at very poor children in other countries, they'll play with sticks, or they'll play with rubber tires outside. They'll build little forts. They'll play even in Haiti. They'll play in the worst of all imaginable dumps and slums and garbage pits. But they still want to play, no matter what the hardship. And they love to play with each other. They love to have games of different types. So when we grow up, none of us grow up perfect. We all are filled with certain flaws. Some people have the benefit of having a loving father or a loving mother, and one that's not so loving. Maybe they think they're being loving, but historically, a lot of people realized in order to survive, you had to maintain discipline. You had to be self-sufficient. Therefore, the type of discipline they gave you may have been misinterpreted as, gee whiz, I only get rewarded if I do what they want me to do and do it right. But otherwise, I'm scolded or I'm reprimanded or I'm yelled at or I'm beaten. This happens. Just imagine a family going across the Great Prairies, or before they got to the Great Prairies, going across from St. Louis out, the last bastion of civilization where you had a chance to turn around and go back east. Now you're going out to the Great Divide, the Great Continental Divide, where more Americans perished because they might have taken the wrong turn, they might have gotten there too late, winter set in, they didn't have enough provisions to get back, or maybe they couldn't, and they couldn't find a way across. Now, those who did manage to get through got through because they had enormous discipline. They made sacrifice. They were very self-sufficient. If anything broke, they could fix it. They had to. There was no servicing of anything. There was no making a phone call. There was just you and your family. In fact, many times it's been chronicled in diaries of how people, as they went, when things started to get bad, the animals no longer had enough feed, they were weak, so therefore they had to start throwing stuff off the cart, their Conestoga wagons, or their wagons to lighten the load. They looked at what they were throwing away, and they would always be reminded they can always buy it or build it again. But starvation wasn't an option. And the last thing they wanted to do is have to eat their oxen or their horses, because if they didn't have those, they had a 1,000-mile walk ahead of them. No way they were going to make it. Now imagine the kind of communication, emotions, insecurities they had to deal with. And then we look at ourselves today and we say, gee whiz, why do I act out the way I do? Or why do I say what I say? Why do I treat people the way I treat them? It's not just you in this moment making a decision how you want to say something or respond to something. It's all of those moments growing up that now you become the cumulative sum total of everything you've experienced, good and bad. So you'll have moments when someone encouraged you to think you could do anything. So you'll have this exuberance, I can do anything. And then there'll be moments where you have great self-doubt because someone says, you're an idiot, you're stupid, you know. And then you think, whoa, and you'll believe it, even if you're too young. Or someone who violated your personal space, you never had any personal space. Or someone who didn't give you unconditional love, but only conditional acceptance. So you're constantly striving to get someone's attention or get some acknowledgement, because the kid doesn't know how to intellectualize this, so they emotionalize it. And almost always when we emotionalize something, we take it in and it becomes a permanent record. So now that's a tape, and that tape goes off at all the wrong moments, and our response is always, always wrong. And you know how you're thinking wrong thoughts and responding the wrong way? Just keep a little diary of what you say to people, what you write to people, the messages you leave them, and watch to see how similar they are. And that's telling you that you're reacting, you're not using reason. You'll never get the outcome you want when you react. It's possible to get the outcome you want when you use reason. So how do we change this? The question is, can we change this? And the answer is, no, we cannot. For the rest of your life, anything that's ever happened to you, good or bad, happy or sad, positive, exuberant, or devastatingly down and dirty, will be with you for every second of your life. The difference is, by becoming aware of this, there's a split second where you can stop yourself from saying, doing, eating, drinking, acting out in the wrong way and say, hold on, what is the likely outcome of the choice I'm about to make? And then in that moment say, no, I will make a better choice. I want a better outcome. And when you make that better choice, which takes humility, controlling the ego, taming the fires of your anger and resentment, which never go out, ever, your whole life. It's like you open a door and suddenly there's just molten hot lava waiting for the wrong word, the wrong expression, and boom, boy, it just, like a volcano, just erupts. So this whole nonsense, this whole psycho fraud of Freud and Jung, they all had brilliant ideas, but they were all grossly flawed. There's never been anyone ever cured of any of these mental conditions by psychoanalysis. That's not to suggest it doesn't have some value. It does, but mainly in helping people to understand that what they've been doing in blaming and to extrapolate an issue, always projecting towards everyone else and always making themselves the center of their own dramas, and then making themselves to be a victim so they can continue these patterns, to show all that is good, that I support. But it doesn't change anything. So if you go to psychoanalysis for 20 years twice a week, spending $150 each session, because you are a manic person, at the end of 20 years you'll be an educated manic person, or an educated psychotic, or an educated neurotic. But you won't change. Nobody ever changes. Nobody ever changes. All you do is change how you're going to respond. So how do we change how we respond? We have to create new memories. We have to create new experiences, create new positive moments. When we're able to create new positive experiences in a moment, then we have a new tape. We have a new tape that's not ready to spit like a cobra at you, throw a hissy fit, go nuts on you, repeat some sarcastic, demeaning, degrading language, behavior, emails. Instead, you take a more spiritual approach. And you see, okay, someone says something bad to me, I don't have saying bad in return. Someone says something that's not right, I can say that's their issue, not mine. Someone who says something positive, I can appreciate that they said something positive. Someone who wants to share something that is positive without something negative, I can do that. If someone wants to share something positive followed by something negative, always say no to that. Let me explain that again. We make the mistake of saying, well, you know, they're really nice in this area, but they're not nice in this area, and they're terrible in this area. Then that is not a person who should be in your life on any level. Well, this person comes into work at 9 o'clock, stays till 7 at night, does their work diligently. That's all good. Okay? But then they steal, and they lie, and they're sexually abusive. Well, that's no good. So what is the issue? You're balancing that? There is no balance. If someone does not treat you all the time with respect, say goodbye to them. I mean goodbye. I don't care who it is. Goodbye. Don't give people a second chance to have the toxic, reactionary, conditioned, and absolutely predictable part of their being come at you again and snap at you like a Rottweiler on a baby's throat. There is no one who's going to change their behavior. People don't change their behavior. All they do is change how they want to respond to the conditioning and the circumstances in their life. If you're really honest, you understand that. If you're not, continue playing the game. Dysfunctional relationships don't become functional. They become adaptively commensurate with their needs. So if a person is marrying someone because they're financially insecure or emotionally insecure, then they will look for whatever they can accept in that person that is acceptable, all the while never addressing their underlying insecurity that is the bedrock upon which that false relationship is based. Can you be that honest? Most people can, unfortunately. So we play these games that all I have to do is read the 10 steps to overcoming a bad relationship. Well, you could read 2 million steps. You're never going to overcome a bad relationship. Bad relationships never become better. They only become more tolerant, where you decide what you're not going to overreact by. You don't go from unconditional love or hate to unconditional love. It doesn't happen. All you go is, give me another chance. Just another chance. I've learned. No more. I won't do it again. You ever meet anyone who didn't do it again? No, all they do is displace energy. You want to see displaced energy? Go to an AA meeting. Someday the AA people will actually be honest about the limitation in that. But they won't. You and I know it. Boy, do I know it. I know it from people I know real close. We don't even have the honesty in our society to see how deep our dysfunction is, our biases. So we're not changing. All you do is circumstances, unless you change by creating new positive tapes, by creating new mindsets, by creating new experiences. Everything else stays. It's just waiting for you to, or someone else, to open that door. And when it does, then suddenly, Dr. Jekyll, meet Mr. Hyde. All right? And then we'll see how long it takes for the damage to be assessed. Whoa, where'd that tornado come from? I mean, yeah. And you know how many more behind that? You know the amazing thing about a spitting cobra? Do you know that its entire life, no matter how many times it spits venom, it never runs out? It can spit 1,000 times and still be lethal. Nonstop. So just understand what I'm saying, because I want to be absolutely clear here. There's nothing in our life that we ever forget. It's there. It's behind a door. And all you have to do is make the wrong statement, the wrong gesture, not do what someone expects, not be what they want you to be, disappoint them in a way that you didn't know was disappointing, but they perceived in that mind. Because remember, once that tape clicks, they're going to change the context of everything. They rewrite it. They are pathological liars. The dark side of your mind must stay in lie mode all the time. They lie, they manipulate, they deceive, they turn everything upside down so they come out the victim, because if they don't come out the victim, then they can't punish you. They can't blame you. You can't say, oh my God, I'm sorry. You're right. I shouldn't have did that. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have stolen that. I shouldn't have eaten that. They can't do that, because then they have to take responsibility. And if you take responsibility, then you're not going to do it. But as long as they can blame the world or someone for why they're pissed off perpetually, but smiling on the outside, trying to gain people's attention, because people knew what you were really like, who's going to want to have you as a friend? Most people wouldn't be friendship material. 99% of people would never be relationship material, because the only time you ever know about the truth of who you really are in a relationship with is once they've figured that you are too far in to get out. And then comes the pain, the gossip, the maligning, the endless calls, the forgiveness that fights, the forgiveness that fights, the forgiveness that fights. You might as well own stock in a chocolate and a rose factory, because you're going to go broke, and there won't be enough roses in the world for all the times people have to apologize. But don't we get it? Don't we understand? It's just going to continue, because that's what a person masters. And what you master is what you will do. If you master manipulation, you will be a master manipulator. Look at Obama, look at Clinton, look at all politicians. These are the lowest forms of human beings, and yet they are put in the most powerful position. I don't blame them for that. I blame us. What's going on in your mind that you would allow anyone that is that manipulative to have that much power, and look what they do with it, and then want them to go back into power more? It's our sociopathological dysfunction, not theirs. I mean, you know what it's like? It's like the American public all works in a bank, and we see thieves coming in, and we rush into the vault, take all of our money, put it out on the counter, and say, thank you, Jesus, for being here today. And the politicians come out and take the money, put it in the bank, and say, I'm going to invest this on your behalf. I know you will. How much do you want? You don't have enough money for me. It will never be enough, because I got a lot of friends out there in corporate America. I had hedge fund and equity partnership, and I got these women. They're not even real. They're actually Sefford wives who are made completely out of silicone and genetic engineering. They're all wives of hedge funds and equity partnership people. And you can't have a conversation more than one syllable at a time or three words combined, because they'll drop over and faint. It's not in their code. But we need money for them. They've got to have their yachts and their mansions. They've got to go with P. Diddy and the rest of the people who suddenly became respectable. They've got to be able to go over there to France, and they have to have their private jets. Okay, no problem. Let's go get some more money out of the vault. And who's in the vault making it? Well, you know, iron workers and school teachers, and they're just loving making and giving to you. Good. Tell them we like them. You've never come in and had dinner with him. You've never invited him anywhere. I know, but they still must know that we're very busy spending their money. So keep that money coming. Okay, it's all yours. Now imagine people coming in every day, and they don't have to steal from you. You're giving it to them, because you don't protest. You don't fight them. That's a dysfunctional relationship. And that's most of the relationships we have today. We should have joy, happiness, creativity. And the people who do, it's because they've chosen to grow in ways that otherwise would keep them limited to their conditioning. If you're just limited to your conditioning, then all you're going to have is reactions. Break that barrier. Become independent. Start to grow. Look at what you want to be. Look at where you want to go. Look at the outcomes you want. And that's the only thing you should do. And when it starts to go anywhere else, push the button, says stop. Nope, not going to react. That door's staying closed. I can't change what's behind the door. I can change not opening it. I can change not reacting. I can change how this game is going to be played. I'm going to be in control of how I respond. I'm Gary Nall. Those are some of my thoughts. Now we're going to go to the phones in just a moment. Give us a call. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a minute. Do you want Les Paul and Mary Ford. I'm Gary Nog. Let's say hello to Edmund from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing, Gary?
Doing great, thank you.
Yeah, my sister is always dizzy. Like she's lightheaded, and she visited the doctor who said she has hypotension, which is low blood pressure. Mm-hmm. What would you recommend?
Well, first, you shouldn't have someone like me answering a question once she's in medical care, because I can't do that. What I could suggest that it's not difficult to deal with hypotension, but you need a physician. Once a physician's made a diagnosis and once she's under treatment, she has to look at first the, I suggest that she looks at the condition and looks at the physician desk reference. Anything that he prescribes will be in the physician's desk reference. Then look for that yourself. Look at, does it actually treat it? Will it reverse it? And what are the side effects? Once she has decided whether or not she wants to undergo that or try an alternative therapy, then I could make some suggestions and I'd be happy to. But I can't interfere when a physician is helping with a person. But are there alternatives? Yes, there are alternatives. There are several
What she did, she did not get any prescription. The doctor just told her that she has she has hypotension, but pretty much that's it. But she hasn't taken any medication yet.
I understand, but how I would look at it is I would also ask her at the same time to have a heavy metal test done, because the metals in the body, especially mercury and lead, are essential to understanding this. Also, I would have her check for the sodium and potassium balance. The sodium on the extracellular fluid, the potassium on the intercellular fluid, and also the thyroid gland, because a thyroid gland that is underactive or overactive can lead to symptoms of hypotension, especially if it's underactive. And then I would also balance that out by looking at the blood. I would look at all the adrenals. I would look at adrenal function, because with low adrenal function, you can have hypotension symptoms. With low blood sugar, you can also have hypotension symptoms. And with an underactive pituitary gland. So you have to consider all that. So what she needs to do now, she needs to have these other tests taken. And then at least come back, and I'll be happy to, if she chooses an alternative approach, then I'll be happy to share a protocol. Okay, all the best to you.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Let's say hello to, Johan from New York? Hi. Johan, you're on the air. Please, hello, you're on the air. Just turn, you got to come on. Nope. All right.
Hello?
Yes.
This is Robert, not Johan.
All right, Robert, happy to help you.
Okay, I can hear you now.
Again.
Please, just my engineer, I need to turn down all the other volume. Go ahead, Robert, you're on.
Okay, I'm okay on this end. Let me go ahead and speak. Let me give my little comments here, and then you can comment. It's in regards to melatonin. I have a wife who's 55 years old, and she's a night shift worker. I have heard in the past, and I've even heard you mention, that a person should take melatonin at nighttime. Then I've read some studies in life extension where people who took melatonin in the daytime for night shift workers when they come home may promote cancer. Then I recently heard Dr. Bob Marshall say, no, you should take the melatonin in the daytime when you come home to reset your clock, but make sure your room's all dark. So I was actually giving my wife like 1.2 milligrams at nighttime to help her. So what I'm getting at is I don't want to promote any cancer or cause any problems. How would you address giving melatonin to a night shift worker who works four nights a week and then is off three?
What are the hours that your wife works?
She's a nurse and she works from 7 to 7 in the morning, 7 p.m. to 7 a.m.
Right, so she's
comes home and goes to bed about 9.
What I would suggest is about 11 o'clock. Would that be her normal sleep hour between, let's say, 11 and 12?
Well, she's working 11 p.m.
No, I'm saying when she's not working, what is her normal sleep? When she normally goes to sleep when she's not on night shift.
Well, Gary, that's a little tricky because some experts say that they should keep the same pattern, you know, because then that's really throwing things off. So but she does sometimes try to go to bed like on some of those days off at 11 or 12, but then she ends up being up because her clock is already set. She's been doing it so long.
Okay, I would disagree. I would share a different point of view. I believe that it would be best if she did get a normal sleep, but take, during the night when she's at work, take melatonin, even, I would say, about 1 to 2 milligrams at around 11 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. Because even though there's some light, of course, where she's working, it will have some impact on supplementing what the brain would not otherwise, through the pineal gland, be releasing.
It won't make her groggy, will it?
No, it won't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all the
and
best.
And you agree with not taking it in daylight hours because it may promote cancer?
I have not seen any science on that at all. So I will not, until I read this actual scientific literature, I can't tell you that. Okay? Let's go to over and say hello to Kevin. Hi, Kevin. You're on. Kevin from Orange County, California. You're on.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
Good.
I appreciate you putting in time to answer our calls. I'm trying to help my uncle who is diabetic and came down with ulcerative colitis 2 months ago. At first, he was misdiagnosed for infection, was given every antibiotics in the book, and after a few weeks of getting worse, he was given steroid, which helped him. Now he's been released for 2 weeks almost, extremely weak and without energy.
How old is he? How old is your...
I think he's like 51.
Oh, he's young.
He's 51 years young.
How long has he had ulcerative colitis?
It's been 5 weeks so far, and after he was given the steroids, he got better.
Okay.
And then he's been put on a no fruit, no veggies, and no fiber diet, and he's taking still steroids and the condition is getting better, but he's very weak. So we were wondering what she should do.
Okay, well, I would look at this in a little different way. I have seen that ulcerative colitis is a chronic disorder where the mucous membranes that line the colon become very red, and then in time, frequently they develop ulcers, and they end up with gas and bloating and blood. And the colon muscles then have to work harder to move this hardened mass of fecal matter through the body. And then what happens is this causes the mucus lining of the colon wall to bulge out into small pouch-like projections called diverticula. And that's generally in the lower part of the large intestine called the sigmoid. It's an S-shaped colon. And ulcerative colitis can be from mild to serious. I have never seen anyone cured of it using steroids. What I believe should be done is that first and foremost, look at two approaches. One is a mind approach, because almost always when I'm looking at colitises, Crohn's disease, ileitises, inflammation and infections in the colon, I'm looking at people who tend to hold their stress tight and who... a lot of times it's engineers, it's people who are on time reality deadlines, who feel a lot of internal pressure, and they are overstressed, and they lock that stress in that particular part of their body. Now, that's not everyone, but that's an awful lot of people I work with, because when I work with them to start de-stressing and dealing with their stress in a more appropriate and a healthy manner, it makes all the difference in the world. So de-stressing and getting to the underlying cause of their stress is important. Then I believe in turning off the inflammation, and your proteolytic enzymes are very important in helping control inflammation, like pancreatin. The B-complex is essential for the breakdown of all nutrients, and that's good. And extra B6 and even B12, like 1,000 micrograms once or twice a day. Non-dairy acidophilus will help reestablish a healthy bacteria. That's crucial. Also, I would use a free-form amino acid complex. Then L-glutamine. That's the single most important of the nutrients for the intestine. Generally 1,000 milligrams once or twice a day, taken with water or rice milk. And vitamin A helps also, because it's not only a strong antioxidant, but it protects the mucous membranes and helps in their healing. Also, I would use aerobic O7 from Aerobic Life Industries in Dioxachlor, D-I-O-X-Y-C-H-L-O-R. I would also put in there some colloidal silver, which is good, the essential fatty acids, including flaxseed oil, garlic is excellent, glucosamine, sulfate is also good, and then I would use alfalfa, rich chlorophyll, aloe vera 3-4-5 times a day, boswellia, bromelain, bucha, B-U-C-H-U leaves, and turmeric. All good. So chamomile, feverfew, and papaya are also good. You got to drink a lot of good water. Herbal teas, including green tea, is good. And I also believe in eating a lot of green vegetables because of vitamin K, and a vitamin K deficiency is linked to ulcerative colitis. So that's what I would suggest to at least begin the process of realizing there are alternative approaches.
Sure. So when they say no vegetables, is that what can you do about that?
I would challenge them. I don't believe that that is the case. And I would show them alternative approaches that actually show a healing with the vegetables and the phytonutrients and the chlorophyll in those vegetables. You can start with juices, the green juices. We've got to go, Kevin. Thank you for your call. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's say hello to Dr. Martin Feldman, who's standing by. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Gary. A very important issue here. As the seasons change, people with asthma tend to have an increase in their symptoms, especially children. Now, asthma is an allergy specific to the lungs, whereby the airways of the lungs are hyperreactive and respond to allergens in the environment by shutting down. And there are millions of adults who have asthma, but even more, it's even more common in children, and especially children in inner cities. So children in inner cities are exposed to the following: cockroaches throughout the whole country, but especially inner city, and the cockroaches have sort of a dust when they die, and that's very, very allergic. Dust is a trigger, pollen is a trigger, dog hair, cats, pollution. Now, all those environmental triggers are testable via IgE RAST. That's an excellent test for allergens in the environment, inhalant allergens. However, it's a terrible, terrible test for food. Almost no value for food, of great value for environmental. One of the simplest anti-allergy, let's say, devices would be homeopathy, especially allosodes for against the dust or pollen or other of these inhalants. 10% of American kids have asthma. That's terrible. And there are 17 million visits to the emergency room and doctor's office every year. We're getting 17 million visits because of asthma. It's getting more and more common. Over the past 10 years, the percentage of increases, it's going up and up. Now, what do we do to prevent it? That's the key. We want to prevent it, not to just treat it after you get it. And the key to prevention is, in part, step one, environmental control. That's what you have the most control over. You can change your environment. You can change many other things, but the environment's very, very simple compared to other things. First off, you need HEPA level, H-E-P-A, HEPA level filters in your air conditioning system. If you have a heating system with ducts, you have to have HEPA in there. And you have to clean those ducts out regularly. Carpeting is very bad because it tends to have too much dust held in the carpet. Carpeting has to be removed.
HEPA. And dust mites.
Yes, dust mites are very, very damaging, so we don't want to have them around. And one other aspect would be to not have the humidity in the summertime. The humidity may be too great, but the wintertime may be too small. As we get heat into the house, reduces the humidity in the air, and it actually increases somewhat the dust. So we also want 100% cotton fabric covering. Another area which is a little complicated is molds. And molds are sometimes visible via, we'll call it, a discoloration of the ceiling, brownish or wall, where there's a water that has changed the coloring. But we have a step beyond that. That could be mold, very commonly is, but we can have mold plates. Mold plates are very inexpensive. They're very effective. You place them out for certain parts of the day, and then we can have a laboratory, we'll call it, level of molds. If people are interested in the mold plates, if they give me a call, I'll be happy to direct them where to get the mold plates. Again, they're very inexpensive. They're very, very helpful, both for the type of molds out there and the amount of molds that are being, let's say, present. And what else do we have to do? We have to remove all allergens and additives and dyes from the diet. So food allergy, first step would be to remove the common allergens, wheat, dairy, corn, yeast, beef, and others. But also you might consider doing a 6 to 10 day, eliminate the food completely and reintroduce it after this 10th day and have a large meal of just the one food and see what happens. If the food's allergic, commonly there'll be a reaction at that moment. Also, water is very important, but it should be purified water. The water tends to reduce the mucus production in asthma and is very, very helpful in general. Plus, organic food, all food for asthmatic kids or adults should really be organic. Garlic may help a great deal, as might onions. And they fight the asthma to a certain extent. It can be very helpful. What about some of the specific, we'll call them supplements?
Run down them quickly, Marty.
Okay. Quercetin, magnesium, vitamin C, vitamin B12, B-complex, including B6, fish oil or algae, EPA, bromelain, carotene, selenium, and again, aller sodes. We have here a major health problem. We have a natural approach. The first major step is environmental. The second step is to reduce the environmental food problems.
Very good. Marty Feldman, thank you very much. Dr. Feldman can be reached at 212-744-4413. That brings up the end of our program. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen. You can always go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com to the archives for anything that you missed or want to re-listen to. Now let's say hello to Michael Rupert, who's standing by for his program coming up in a minute. Hi, Michael.
Hiya, Gary. How are you?
Doing great. Michael, what are you going to talk about tonight?
Well, we have a guest that a lot of people are waiting to hear tonight. It's been quite a sensation on the net. David DeGraw of AMP status of 99% of Occupy Wall Street is going to be our guest tonight. He has been a most articulate terrier out there, which is a great compliment. I was once paid by a special forces guys, and he's one of the leaders out there really shaking things up. So we're going to get a lot of good information that we aren't getting from mainstream about where the movement is, what it's doing, and where it's going next.
Excellent. We look forward to listening. Thank you. And there you are. Now stay tuned for Michael Rupert here on the Progressive Radio Network.
When the sun in the morning peeps over the hill and kisses the roses round my windowsill, then my heart fills with gladness when I hear the trill of the birds in